Hi, Summer Stagers. This is Harry, and I want to share my enormous gratitude to Bob and all of his guests for the gifts of this wonderful podcast. I can't tell you how touched I am every episode to hear your stories, your love for Summer Stage, and your kind messages for me. It is truly a gift. I want you to know that Summer Stage magic is still very much alive. We never knew that 49 years ago, to fill the world with love would capture the hearts of so many, and it still does. After the shows, I like to tell a little one, someday you'll be on our stage. A couple years ago, an 11-year-old magic maker said to me, Mr. Dietzler, when I was little, you told me that someday I would be on this stage, and now I am. More than a couple moms have told me that Summer Stage saved their child's life. You've heard those stories on this podcast. We can see every year how young people are transformed by the experience of working together to share what's inside them with our audience. As one mom said last summer, this summer changed the trajectory of my daughter's life. Whether or not she becomes an actress, she came in as a stranger and left with a family. Right now, I'm reaching out to that Summer Stage family to say, we need you. If the dream of Summer Stage is to continue, our alumni needs to embrace it. These days, my primary job is to raise the funds Summer Stage needs to operate. Now that we're independent and nonprofit within the Upper Darby Arts and Education Foundation, we depend on ticket sales, registrations, and fundraising. Every year, we need to raise more than $300,000 in donations to operate Summer Stage. That's quite a challenge. Upper Darby Township provides support in the form of scholarships to its residents, and we receive some grants, but we depend on individual gifts to keep us going. But I have some great news. A very generous alum has offered to match up to $125,000 in donations, and we have another alum that has committed $25,000 toward that goal. If 100 alumni pledged $1,000, their gifts would be doubled. Of course, every gift of any amount is a huge help. We can also make your donation a monthly gift. Like Bob, I'm also looking forward to the 50th season and alumni reunion next year and to see you in person. And by the way, the school district is completely renovating the theater and lobby with all new seats, carpets, and lighting. It will be ready to serve the next 50 years of Summer Stagers. Please help us make that next 50 years a reality by making a generous gift. Our website is udfoundation.org. Thank you so much.
We all have stories to tell, and they can be heard here. Welcome to Brave and Strong and True, a podcast that engages Summer Stage alumni of all ages. I'm Bob Falkenstein. Mike Hazlett and Chris Lenz credit Of Thee I Sing as their first Summer Stage show in 1978. Mike spent three summers, and Chris stayed around for a while. Both continue to perform to this day. Because of a hardware issue, we had to switch over to a Zoom call, which abruptly ended. I hope you enjoy our conversation, so come along and have some fun. All right, it says recording in progress. Okay, so this is Bob. And I am looking at Chris Lenz and Michael Hazlett. And I don't know how much time we have left on our Zoom call. We had to kind of leave Boomcaster and jump on Zoom, but I hope this works out. I have to say, Chris, you look like you did 40 years ago.
Thank you.
So do I, don't I, Bob?
You do. There's a little glare coming off your top.
That's it. It's my long, luxurious blonde hair.
Okay. All right. No, you guys are looking great. So I'm looking forward to this. Is there anything you guys want to say to introduce yourselves before I get to the questions?
We met in what? My first show was Of Thee I Sing. And
oh,
I think
okay.
Yours was too.
Chris. That's right.
This yeah. So that was 1978, maybe 78, I think.
78. That was the Gershwin summer.
Yes. And so we were both in Gershwin Rhapsody. And so that was how we met. And then we hadn't seen each other in about, what, 40 years? And so I moved back here a couple of years ago. And and it was pretty wild to go to the closing night of Memphis and actually see everyone singing Fill the World with Love.
Yeah, so, wasn't that an amazing show?
Yeah, it was fun.
They were incredible.
A lot of talent.
Yeah. Yeah, we were that was the eve of our vacation. So there's no way I wanted to drive to Philly and then up here and then back through Philly to get to the shore. So yes. I guess I could this is going to be weeks after it, but we kind of crashed the preview. That was but I'm sure the preview was as good as closing night because those kids were spot on. It was an amazing show.
Yeah, well, you can't fake that stuff. You know, you have to be prepared for when it's that intense and there's so much of it because it's just one number after another that, you know, you can't be, you know, bringing your C game to that. You know, you just can't do it.
Yeah. So, Chris, if you don't mind, I'm going to focus some questions on Mike because I know you a lot better.
Correct.
Right? So I was in the same grade as your sister, and I know when I left the high school, you inherited my blue blazer for concert choir. So at believe it or not, at one time I was the same size as Chris Lenz. All right. So Mike, what high school did you go to?
I went to Bonner.
Oh, okay.
And I graduated in 1980.
All right. So you and Chris same age? Were you 80, no. Chris?
No, I just turned 60 this year.
Oh, okay.
And I'm 61, so you graduated in 81.
81, right.
Oh, all right. So where had you been living, Mike? You said you just came back.
I moved a lot. I went to school in Washington, D.C., and I was there for about 10 years. And then after that, I decided I was living all over the DC area, and then I decided I want to go to try show business. So I moved to LA for 5 years, and that was interesting. And I had a good time and did some fun things, and worked for my last job there was at Whit Thomas Productions. You know, they did Golden Girls and Empty Nest, and yeah. So I worked there, and then I just decided it wasn't for me. So then I left there and. I was going to go to New York, and a friend said, come to Western Massachusetts. It's, you know, and decompress. And it was, you know, Western Mass, not too far from Tanglewood and all that stuff. And so it was great to live out there in the country. And then from there, I wasn't making any money. It was like, okay, well, to make some money, you know, my partner and I weren't making any money. And so we decided to, I said, okay, let's go to New York after that. And so we both got jobs and lived in Brooklyn, got a great place in Brooklyn, and then stayed there for I don't remember how many years, and then bought a house at the shore in Monmouth County up by Sandy Hook.
Okay.
So, and that's when I got back into theater. So we were unpacking our boxes and I went to an audition for Sideshow and I got in as the bearded lady, you know? So, yeah.
I see you kept the beard.
Yeah, I did. It came in handy. So, yeah. And then, you know, I stayed at the been at the shore up until a couple of years ago. And, you know, here I am.
All right. So how did you find out about Summer Stage?
Do you remember Fran Dudley?
Oh, yeah. He was Sky Masterson.
Yeah, I was gone for all that. But yeah, he mentioned that there were auditions going on for this and that the guy who was the music director or whatever he called him, who played the piano, I mean, it was Harry, of course, but I had no idea who that was. We didn't know who it was. And said he knows a lot of songs. Just go in and pick a song and he'll be able to play it. And and of course, I picked Send in the Clowns, of all things, which is, you know, very difficult to do. But anyway, so then I got in. So that was the beginning of it. But I didn't know anything before then.
What was your role in Of the I Sing?
I was a reporter. I was a senator. I don't even remember. I was one of the White House staff. I was in the chorus.
Okay.
So we kept very busy in that show.
A lot of the guys, they needed 9 guys to be Supreme Court justices.
And we had 9, yeah.
Yeah. Now, Chris, what were you in Of the I Sing?
The 9 didn't quite.
Yeah, they didn't. The costume change didn't happen a couple of times.
What were you, Christopher?
Actually in the auxiliary chorus. They had a small little group for the younger, the more inexperienced. So we just did various and sundry things, like we ran around pretending to sell concessions. And I have to admit, it was a little embarrassing. But I don't know if you remember Nancy Louise Ideo.
She just had a birthday.
Yeah. Well, she made us feel better because we were all very half-hearted about it, as much as we were thrilled to be in the show. But she just kept running around yelling, "Nuts! Nuts!" And it was hysterical and made us feel a whole lot better. I love Nancy.
Yeah. Well, I think I saw every performance. I was not in that show because I was in Harvey.
So we were Harvey.
We were rehearsing while you guys were rehearsing, and we were going to open right after you. So we would just come up and we would watch. And I thought it was the funniest show that I ended up directing it a couple of years later at St. Andrew's Players. I love the show. I just wish there was like a better cast album for it. I was never really satisfied with the cast album.
I have the studio cast. Is that the one you have?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's from like the 1950s or something.
Oh, no. There's a complete recording. There's a 2-CD thing of the singing and Letting Me Cake. And Maureen McGovern plays Mary. And I forget, Larry Kurt is Wintergreen. And it's all the original orchestrations. And so if you can find it, it might be available online. It's worth a listen.
I will look for that. All right, so now we'll go back to Chris. Chris, what were some of your favorite shows?
I would say Fiorello was one of my favorites. I just loved being one of the card players and working with the amazing Kevin Kane was just incredible. So those numbers, the Politics and Poker and Little Tin Box were just really stunning, stunning numbers that really drove people to their feet. It was just incredible.
They were the true showstoppers of that show.
Yeah. So so definitely Fiorello. I loved Showstoppers, of course. And The Sentimental Journeys were always very touching. Enjoyed those very much too. So I don't think I was in one that I didn't enjoy. I thought they were all really great. I was in there from, I guess, 78 to 81. And then the gala performances and things like that. Mm-hmm. And hoping that there will be a 50th reunion in the works.
I think there's about 6,000 people hoping for that.
Yeah, okay.
It didn't even occur to me until I ran into Janine Dietzler at Memphis. And she mentioned the 50th anniversary is coming up. I went, oh, my God, we're old.
We hope we make it to the 50th anniversary.
Yeah. Did you ever do children's theater, Chris?
I did. Am I not mistaken? Were you the one that was directing Willy Wonka?
I did.
Right. And I was really hoping for that role, but I think Harry felt that Joe Bader had more experience and might bring more of his amazing talent to the role. So I ended up as the Candyman, but was very happy with that.
Oh, but that was a perfect song for you.
Yeah, I loved it. I just loved it. I thought it was a great cast. And I wish I had done more of the children's theater. It was just so energetic, so exciting. So that was a great, great experience. And you were a wonderful director.
And you were a really good director when your jaw was wired shut. That was really something else. Mary Poppins. You're like, everybody move over there. I don't need it anymore.
Well, Mike, I remember you had the first line in the show.
Admiral Boom, yeah.
You were Admiral Boom. And I think the first line was, ahoy, mateys, I'm Admiral Boom, retired seaman of His Majesty's Royal Navy. And I misspelled seaman, and I left it that way. Oh.
Hey, so you got it on your mind.
What were some of your favorite shows, Mike? You already mentioned Mary Poppins, thank you, and Of the I Sing.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Showstoppers. That was really, and Gershwin Rhapsody especially. Both of those, Gershwin Rhapsody, I mean, I didn't know so much of that music. I knew a couple of those songs, but I mean, I still seek out Gershwin stuff now. So that really changed my life. in that regard. And Showstopper and Oklahoma was really a blast because we got, you know, the men, the Kansas City dance went over so well that we did a reprise of it and started dancing all over again. And that was pretty hot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I have a recurring dream that I'm on Jeopardy and the final Jeopardy category is George and Ira Gershwin.
Oh, cool. That's great.
I would probably know. I would probably know it because we did about 90 songs in that show.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Loved it.
So, and you know, I was in a piano bar one night and the piano player was, somebody said, can you stump the piano player? And, the song Who Cares from Of the Sing.
That's from a Dick Van Dyke episode.
It may be, but it was originally from Of the Sing. And the piano player had no idea. And so that was interesting.
You stumped him.
Yep.
Yeah. No, there was a Dick Van Dyke episode where he was in a bar and he was waiting for somebody and they didn't show up and he got angry and he walked by the piano player and he says, buddy, you want to hear something? And he said, who cares? And the guy starts playing, who cares if the sky? I'm pretty sure it was Dick Van Dyke.
That's funny. That is fun.
That's where I thought you were going with this. So who were some of your earlier mentors? Right, because we were kids or teens. Right. You know, who did you look up to?
Well, I know my mom looked up to Wally Legowski. Well, she loved him. She thought he was the greatest thing that roamed the earth. She's like, what a hunk.
My mom. Lynn Tucker for me, definitely.
Okay. Because
some of the older girls sort of took, I think my experience was that they took us under their wing a little bit to help us through some of the stuff we didn't know. And so I got to know them. And then I ended up doing a show with their Lynn's mother, you know, at that did Fiddler with her, you know, about a year later. So that was interesting.
Where? Because I did Fiddler with Lynn's dad.
Where was that? Was Marble Newtown Players?
Oh, okay. All right. No, I was at a Players Club.
Oh, okay.
And Lynn's dad was Lazar Wolf. And he was amazing.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, Marple Newtown was a fun place too. So what were some of your interesting What were some of your favorite moments on stage? Anyone can take that. Hello everyone. Upper Darby Summer Stage is now in its 49th season of magic. Please visit their website, www.udsummerstage.org, for information about performances and ticket sales. If you are able to make a donation, please consider it. Summer Stage is now a not-for-profit organization and relies on contributions from good folks like you. Tell them Bob sent you.
Favorite moments. I can share with you a calamitous moment. And I don't know if you remember, I think we were doing, it was Showstoppers. And I try to remember if it was Fascinating Rhythm or Applause, but it was all dark and we were all in gloves and we were singing. It was a rehearsal. And all of a sudden there was a scream and we looked and we didn't know what happened. The lights went up and Ruth Raymond was missing. Do you recall that? Evidently, she had fallen 8 feet through one of the flats that separated.
Oh, my goodness.
And she fell down and she was down below the stage. Thank goodness she wasn't hurt. But we thought that she was abducted. We thought it was the first Summer Stage abduction.
We were ruthless.
We were ruthless. So that was a calamitous one.
One I always enjoyed watching while I was in the chorus in Dames at Sea, Dewey doing that song, Singapore Sue. Mm. And it got crazier and crazier every night. And I had no idea that the song was supposed to be done that way, you know, or that could be done that way. And he just, you know, he really, really piled it on high and deep. And it was very funny. So it was hard not to laugh.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So would anyone like to say something to Harry? Because I know he listens.
Well, I want to thank Harry for the amazing experience. My parents have always thanked Harry for having a safe haven, a wonderful place where we could all be, you know, they could be free of us, if you will, for nearly 12 hours a day, you know, if you want. And, you know, I've served a lot of roles under Harry. You know, I was his box office manager for a while. I participated in the you know, Winter Performing Arts Center, and he's just one incredible, amazing man who has touched so many lives and made us the well-rounded people that we are today. And I'm forever grateful. So, Harry, I know you're listening. Just thank you from the bottom of our hearts for this amazing, incredible experience that continues on each year.
Yeah, it changed my life, really, the summer stage, because up till that point, I think I had nothing to do in the summer because I wasn't quite old enough to work, or, you know, I wasn't quite there yet about working. And I was sitting around watching soap operas all day, and then and then watching TV at night. So that changed everything. I mean, I just had no idea. I had no idea what could happen, what could be. And you know, after when I got to the Jersey Shore, joined the choir at this church, and then all of a sudden they used to do these little operettas and things, and the choir director got dementia. So I took over and I started doing full-fledged musicals in this tiny little church. I mean, we had tap dancing in this church, doing anything goes, you know. So I did 10 years as artistic director, and I directed, I think, a musical every year, and choreographed, and sometimes I had to step into the Drowsy Chaperone and tap dance again. So, you know, and even my last show with Sweeney Todd was right before the pandemic. So I've kept at it.
Wow.
So it changed my life.
Mm-hmm. So are you still performing, Michael?
While I was doing that Sweeney Todd right before COVID, I got in a car accident.
Ooh.
And so during the run, it wasn't Tech Week, it was a week before. And so I pushed through on that, but I got my hip replaced, one of them, and I have to get the other one. I am in the Philadelphia Gay Men's Chorus, but I just haven't gotten to sing with them yet. Mm-hmm. So that I'm hoping my body sustains me this fall. But yeah, I don't think I'll stop. I think I'll keep going, and it's just it's a nice way to spend your time performing. Mm-hmm.
Now, Chris, I know you post that you're appearing, you know, with different choruses. So tell us what you're up to.
Well, I just got an invite this past week to be one of Andrea Bocelli's backup singers for his upcoming concerts. He's doing one on December 7th at the Wells Fargo Center, and then two up at Madison Square Garden. So I'll be one of 24 singers. That'll be his chorus.
Wow.
So I'm really, really excited about that.
I bet.
I'm really, really tickled about that. So I've been doing a lot of chorus work. You know, I was one of the voices of Philly Pops for about 12 years. And
yeah, I thought you wrote a very nice tribute to Peter Nero when he recently passed. I don't understand Facebook, but I've been told that you only see 20% of what people put out there. And I must have been my lucky day to have the opportunity to read what you wrote about Peter Nero.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, he was definitely a mentor. I had the great good fortune of being the liaison between our group and Peter. So we had some wonderful, very inspirational late night conversations. And he was just, legendary. And I'm just really sorry that, you know, what's going on with the Pops right now. I hear they are performing under a no-name clause, and they're such a talented group. So I hope everything works out, because our Philadelphia culture, our community, it's so important. And I would hate to see that disappear. You know, I mean, our Philadelphia Orchestra is great. Our Pops are great. And I just hope that they realize that what they do and do well, and keep it that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you still take voice lessons from our favorite high school music teacher?
I am in close touch with them. I'm not physically taking lessons with them. I'm more with them on a social basis, but
Who is that?
This is David Hall.
Oh, I know of him, but
yeah, who's our Upper Darby High School concert
master. He's a legend.
Yeah, he really is. So, I mean, he's still chugging away at almost 87. He's still, still teaching and and looking great and doing well. And I just saw him last week at a function. So, but we do check in. Absolutely.
All right. Well, please tell him I said hello.
Oh, he'll love that. You're one of his chickadees. Yeah.
Yeah. And have him listen. Because I'm sure some of the folks that I've already spoke with would be former students of him.
That would be excellent. I will, I'll make him aware of the Bobcast podcasts. And exactly. Is there, I apologize. Is there a list, Bob, of each person? Like, is it listed? Like, number one is such and such. Harry's number 50. Like, is there a list, or you just
right? You could go anywhere any place that has podcasts, you could just go there, whether it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or you could just you could just type "Brave and Strong and True" into Google, and it'll come up.
Great.
But yeah, you guys will be 52.
50, and are we the first twins that you interviewed in twos, or have you?
No.
You've done other twos.
In fact, if you saw Memphis, you know who Flynn Dolan is.
Oh, sure.
I interviewed him and Monica together.
Oh, how great. I haven't had a chance to see that one yet.
And then the one that's coming out this Monday was Carolyn Thompson and her son, Andrew Thompson.
Love them. Yeah, they were in the audience right next to me that night.
So you're the third duo.
Okay.
All right, let me move on. Like I said, we're on Zoom. I don't know when we're going to get booted off. So let me jump around here. So we'll go back to Mike. What role will the performing arts play in your life?
What will they play?
What role? Yeah. How important, how will you use the performing arts to continue to fill the world with love?
I still go to see theater whenever I can. I think it's important to see it. And, I find it's interesting that you go to what is amazing. I haven't gotten to do it here, but at the Shore where I live, all the schools, even the high schools there have theater programs now, even the Catholic schools do. And I've got to see some amazing, amazing things. And, even if you go in there and you just see that one thing, that one person, that you think is just so great, it's just amazing. And I think it's I try to do that and talk about it a lot and expose people to it. And, and it's just think it's a great way to spend your time. So, I don't know if that answers that question or not.
No, it sounds good. So, Chris, what role will the performing arts play in your life as you continue to fill the world with love?
Well, I was able to try my hand at some other in some other areas that I didn't know I had a talent with. I was working at Ridley High School with their theater program for about 5 or 6 years, and was helping them with vocal interpretation. And really helped the kids get into it and get really excited about what they were doing. And, that a song is far more than just singing it, that the lyrics are about, but also, how you use your body in expressing it and your face and that sort of thing. And so that was an exciting thing that I didn't know that I could do and enjoy. So I hope to be able to continue doing that. And as Michael was saying, I'm a really avid supporter of the theater. So I try to go see everything because it's an education. Whether a show is truly amazing or maybe it's lacking a little bit, there's always something special that you can pull from it and learn from. So if that answers the question, I think that's a lot of what, you know, that role of what the performing arts have meant and will do for me in the future.
Yeah. No, that's a great answer. Now, usually I ask about, do you have any traditions or do you have any superstitions? And I kind of remember one about you, Chris. Way back when, I remember you guys lived right behind Pilgrim Garden Shopping Center.
Correct.
And I worked at the supermarket. I think it was called Plus or something. And we had a show and I had asked you, you know, could you talk to your parents and, you know, could you give me a ride, you know, to the show? And they actually invited me to come over for dinner.
Bob, we're starting to lose you a little bit.
Oh, okay.
You're freezing a little bit.
Oh, all right. You can still hear my voice?
Keep going again.
Okay.
Oh, yes. You're okay now.
All right. So I remember they invited me over for dinner, and they were amazed how much I could eat and then go on to do a show because they said you could never eat before a performance.
That is very true. I try to eat something that would sustain me, you know, through the performance, because I mean it's a terrible feeling to also go to a performance and be really hungry. But I find whether I was doing recitals or shows, if I ate like something like scrambled eggs or something like that, or a protein, that really stayed with me, gave me the energy that I needed, and then could be ravenous and go down to Casey's with everybody else or Perkins or wherever else we went after the shows. And how
right, so, eating. Yeah, that sounds more like a super. A that sounds more like a superstition than tradition. How about you, Mike?
I'd like to, before I go on, I'd like to get about the last half hour, get time to myself and get it in my head. Find a quiet place that I can focus and concentrate. I tend to walk around like backstage a lot by myself and just sort of keep my head down and don't really talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. Because I did one show, a production of Jekyll and Hyde, and it was a miserable experience. And the director, as we were going on opening night, I mean, we were in the green room and he started reading inspirational quotes and he read about 13 of them. And it's like, wait a minute, why are you filling my head with this information? I'm about to go on stage. What kind of a nutcase are you?
All right. I just got a 10 minute warning. You can see that. It says your free meeting will end in 10 minutes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I think only the host sees that.
Oh, okay. And I'm not going to upgrade because that's how they win. So, all right, it was blocking Mike's face, so I had to get rid of it. So, 9:34. So, let me ask you, we'll start with Chris with this question. Who would be your four faces on your Mount Rushmore of summer stage?
Oh, wow. Okay. I would say, and they don't have to be male faces, right? They can be male or female faces. So these are basically people like that really inspired me or.
Right. You're building a monument to them.
Okay.
And you can have more than four if you need more than four.
Okay. Well, I would definitely say Tina Fey for sure, for obvious reasons, but also for the gracious and wonderful person and the very down to earth person that we all knew her as before. And it continues to be, you know, as an Uber star. Let me see. I would also say Jeff Brown, believe it or not. If you remember Jeffrey Brown?
Yes.
He helped a lot of us out through some very difficult times, through some personal transitioning during summer stage, and brought a lot of comfort, as well as his fabulous parents, who are still both with us. So I would say him. Let me see, who else? So many wonderfully talented people. I would say Monica Horan Rosenthal too, definitely. Just wins my heart over. I adore her. And probably you, Bob. I think you. Yes, yeah, definitely. Because, and I'll tell you why. And I don't know if anybody's mentioned it, but did you ever reveal yourself as the special columnist that helped a lot of us out during the Summer Stage newspaper as Miss Grapesy Vine? Oh. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah, I think it was you, either Joanne Shaw or Judy Shaw had copies of those. And
okay,
she scanned them or took a picture of them and sent them. Yeah, the characters line.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, you really helped a lot of people out, including my sister, more than you'll ever know. And that means a lot because, you know, there are a lot of situations, a lot of drama that surfaces, a lot of, you know, things. And that was a really great idea. I don't know how long that lasted, that paper, but uh-huh. I thought that was really great. And obviously it stuck in my mind. And even I had it in my little cheat sheet of notes. So I'm glad I could get that in. It's Grapesy Vine. So. All right.
Well,
you made it to Mount Rushmore of Summer Stage. Congratulations.
So I'm up there with Monica and Tina and Jeff. I'll take that.
Yep.
All right. How about you, Mike?
That's a tough one. I wasn't around that long. So I'd have to start with Harry, of course. And I would pick Ed Fisella because he was directed the first, you know, few shows, I think, that I did. And he was always very fond of saying, "We've never done anything like this before." And it was always, you know, put your hands up, you know. I would also pick Ann Owens.
Oh.
She was a good friend, and she just was a steadying force in the box office and in the office. And she you know, I just really enjoyed her company. And just, you know, there were among many nice people, she was one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And save her last, I don't know what's the train whistle. I don't know. Hold on one second. I'm right by the CKN train.
The 7 o'clock's coming in.
Cash for the merchandise. Cash for the button hooks.
So my last one would be Susie. Well, I don't know. Is she Waldy now still?
Yeah.
She Waldy.
She was Cherokee when I met her.
Okay.
And then she's been through a few names since then. But I started taking dance classes as soon as I could with her. You know, made the trek, you know, to Swarthmore every Saturday morning. And but she did choreography on a bunch of the things, and she really was very helpful, and she, you know, she understood. I mean, I couldn't dance very well at all at the beginning, and but I have natural ability. You know, not the greatest, but I have a natural ability, and she brought that out.
Nice.
And so that's always been a great. And so it was just interesting that when I would go to auditions, I knew many times that my dancing was going to get me in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the singing helped, of course, but the dancing, right. You know, because not all the guys don't always dance.
Well, I did an episode with her and she was wonderful. So you have to go back and look for that.
Oh, great.
So my brother lives in CKane, right on Franklin Avenue.
Oh, okay. We're practically neighbors.
Right. Like, yeah. Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. So, I don't know if he can hear the train, though.
Oh. Good for him.
Yeah, we have a freight train. It's like the Norfolk, Suffolk or whatever, and it passes through an intersection, and even if it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, they still have to blow the horn, you know, as they go through the intersection. And yeah, I think I got used to it, but
I grew up in Falkirk. We had freight train right behind our house, you know, would shake the entire house, and the TV reception would go, and you'd be on the phone and people were like, "Oh my God, what is that?" And then my last apartment in Jersey, I lived across the street from the train, one of the commuter lines that went into New York. So I'm so used to the trains now that I should be in a Fellini film, you know?
So what is your day job, Michael?
I work for Trinity Health System in a Mercy Life Center, which is Living Independently for the Elderly program. I work in the clinic there. I'm the appointment scheduler for them, and so it's basically making sure that people are getting to their doctor's appointments, their specialist appointments. And we have a clinic there with nurses on board, and we have therapy there. And it's people who want to stay in their own homes, who are not quite ready for nursing homes, and are still can still get around for the most part. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much end of life care for these folks. And most of them are pretty poor. So it's a nice lifeline. And so it feels good to work there.
Yeah, you know, it sounds very rewarding.
Yeah, I've been in healthcare for quite a few years, and this one is the one that I think really means the most.
Very good. That's so nice. How about you, Chris?
Well, I needed a job that I could establish flexibility for auditions, particularly back in the in my younger days. So I established a cleaning business, which I call Cleanse, meaning C-Lens. So Cleanse.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So it worked out really great. So I've been doing that since 1997. So I have a few employees, and it's still very rewarding, and I can kind of set my own hours and, you know, still make the auditions. I sing a lot of funerals. I have 6 church jobs. So that gives me the flexibility to be able to go and sing the funeral and still be able to fit clients in, or I can send other employees there. So that's really been a wonderful balance, and between, you know, music and making people's homes lovely. So
it's been really great. I love the name Cleanse. That's perfect. Gee, how'd you think of that?
Yeah, right. I mean,
that's probably your email already.
Right, or it should be my business email. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. I never knew. Yeah, I run into you from time to time, because we're part of that little like reunion group that meets at the Drexel Hill Pizza and all those other places.
Right.
But I never knew what Chris did.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right. That is wonderful. I'm going to wrap this up because it's saying less than a minute. Oh. And I'm glad this worked out. I know you guys were very high maintenance in that first half hour.
Yes, we sure were.
I've got two computers and a tablet in front of me, and we're using the phone. That's what we're going through.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. I mean, we'll suffer a little in quality because, the Boomcaster is like Zoom on steroids. I mean, it's really a good product, which is why I use it. But in a pinch, I've had to do this. I just panic because I forget how to do it. Or maybe I don't want to do it because I spent half a year teaching on the darn thing. Oh, there goes the train. That'll be our
train.
Another. So, all right, guys. Thank you so much for our music is composed and performed by Neil McGettigan. Please follow Brave and Strong and True on Apple Podcast. While you're there, please rate the show and leave a comment. If you want to be a guest on Brave and Strong and True, please contact me at braveandstrongandtrue@gmail.com. You must have a desktop or laptop computer running the latest version of the Google Chrome browser. It helps if you have an external microphone and headphones, but Apple earbuds work too. However, Bluetooth ones are not 100% reliable, so see if you could borrow wired ones.